Pastor Dave for those warm words of introduction, and it's a joy and a privilege for me to be here and also to share a bit about our ministry. But before I share anything, I ask them to show a short video of our mission, and after which I will continue. Is that okay?
Relate to this family? Don't you wish you had put off the fire when it was just a spark?
Urban India Ministries is a multifaceted organization that is concerned about these sparks becoming a fire. Hence, we conduct preventive seminars through Family, Life and Marriage Enrichment Department, which is known as FLAME.
The FLAME department also helps families who have gone through the burn of frustration and anger so that they might ignite and renew their love for one another. We also conduct seminars from the range of the newlyweds to the grandparents.
I went to UIM at the time when I was struggling with certain challenges. And I can tell you it has made a big difference to our lives. It has made a big difference to our very close family members. It has made a big difference to my friends.
The seminar that I attended a couple of years back from the UI Ministries, that has brought a big healing in our married life as a couple, especially to me as a wife.
FLAME also prepares young couples for marriage through premarital seminars conducted by family educators and counselors.
UIM is also engaged in helping families who have allowed the sparks to become big fires. Home Shanti provides a helpline for Bangalore City, especially for the couples who are distraught, so that their family relationships can be restored.
Without UIM, our family would not have existed today. It would have been a broken family.
My children do us proud because we are together as one family.
We celebrated our silver wedding anniversary, so which is something very great in the present world.
Families also include children. The ones who go through the most turbulent phase is the teenager at home. A lot of love is lost between the parents and children.
UIM offers a leadership curriculum called Trendsetters, which is carried out in many schools, covering 4,000 students a week. This program not only reaches out to teenagers, but also to their parents and their teachers.
Many boys here from a broken family, and I felt that these boys require some kind of counseling. Ever since the trendsetters came in here, our percentage result increased. And then I see these trendsetters sometimes sitting with these boys after the school hours, chatting with them. Trendsetters have done a wonderful job here.
Urban families also include the urban poor. The Kudum Jyoti project provides assistance to families living in poverty by helping their children find education in our tuition centers, or what we call as life centers.
I came to know UIM through Kudun Jyoti Tuition Centers at Vaibhunali. I was 10th standard, dropped out. I had given up my studies and I decided to work, but Kudun Jyoti helped me and encouraged me to pursue my studies. And today, I topped my college in PUC and I'm also pursuing my degree. And I'm also a staff of UI. I thank Kudun Jyoti for bringing life into my life.
Streetsweepers toil every day and they are given gladly much attention. Kudun Jyoti reaches out to their innermost need of self-worth.
The passion for the Lord that sparked in the hearts of a few friends became the flame that brought love, hope and togetherness in a lot of families.
UIM believes in transforming cities, one home at a time.
That's briefly about Urban India Ministries. This is a little old video. There's some more things that has happened after this. We presently are training people for this ministry in India. You know, 20 years back, people never knew what family ministries is all about. If you spoke to somebody in India about family ministry, or when we started it, whenever we talked about family ministry, they thought it's me and my family doing ministry. You know, they didn't realize that there is a need for a family ministry. But today, it is the need of the hour. With divorce rates and family breakdowns, you know, shooting up within the church and outside, we believe, you know, this has become one of the cutting-edge ministry in India. And most of the mission in India have always focused on the poor or on the rural villages. But very, very few ministries have focused on the urban areas where the thinking, where the IT guys, where all the movers and shakers of our nation reside. Sometimes it's easy to reach the people in the outskirts, but these people are very, very hard to crack. But these family breakdowns have actually opened the door for us. They are looking for help. They are looking for help for their children. They are looking for help for them as married couple. So that has helped us to, you know, move beyond, you know, the confines of the church. Now, you saw the helpline that we had advertised as a citywide helpline, but now we have a national helpline. So we started a national helpline number. It's like a 1-800 number. You know, we call it a national helpline number. Home Shanti, that you saw there. Home Shanti is quite an Indian word. You know, Shanti means peace. And the word Home Shanti is resonates with Om Shanti, which is like a very sacred word where usually the Hindu seers will greet, or gurus will greet, like Shalom, you know. So Home Shanti, Om Shanti. So we call it Home Shanti, bringing Shanti or peace in your home. So you can call this helpline number. We have a website related to that. Our website is urbanindia.org. That is our website. Over the years, we realized we can't do this with few people. Our country is 1.3 billion people. And that's a very small country, right? You know, it has 1/6 of the world's population. And India and China put together, we will cover 1/3 of the world's population. But that's the large unreached people group of the world. You know, if you are acquainted with the 1040 window, we fit in there. The largest unreached people group are in India and in China. And the churches in China are growing very, very fast, but not so much in India. Now, to train people, we recently started a master level program, an MA in family life education, because we realized if we need to enter into corporate India, or we need to really engage with thinking people, we need qualification. People are going to ask, so what's your qualification? Are you a psychiatrist, psychologist? And so we realized that people need to get an overall picture of of this whole thing. So we started a family life education. God has blessed us with a new center. We started with zero finance in our hands, trusting the Lord, because very clearly the Lord gave us direction to go ahead and build it. We just started off. It's a big story. It's a story of faith. But the Lord granted us His favor and gave us a beautiful building. It's called Family Mission Center. It's known as UIM FMC, UIM Family Mission Center. So it's a four-story building with facility for a master level program. We have a library, we have classrooms and things like that. So we are doing this course for the last 2 years. It's affiliated to a university in India, so recognized by the government. So we offer MA in family life education, and we have parallelly counseling courses. A lot of training is parallelly happening. As soon as I go back from here, we have three city pastors training, Delhi, Pune, and in Chennai. We are targeting at least 50 to 100 pastors and leaders for a two-day training. And we have some friends from the US also coming to help us with the training for those three-city training that's happening from October 17th to 22nd. So that's briefly about our ministry and what we do in India. If you have questions, you are free to ask now. I would also want to share something that the Lord led me to share, God imprinted in my heart. So I will share that. But before I do that, do you have any questions about the ministry and the mission that we carry out in India? Yes.
Urban areas, portion in rural
areas. Okay, the whole Christian population in India is not more than 3%. We are just 3%. And urban areas depends on which city. So some city like where I am. We are in Bangalore. That's a city I come from. It's called the Silicon Valley of India. So this city has 5 to 7% Christians. But otherwise, South has largely more Christians. Tamil Nadu or Chennai, Hyderabad, Bangalore, Kerala, Cochin, Trivandrum, these areas have more Christians than the North. If we put the population of Christians as just 20 people, how they are spread out, 16 will be down South, okay? On the northeast, which is largely Christian, those are the tribal belt of India, largely Christian, that will have another 3. So the rest of the North India has 1. So that's the way we are spread in India. Yeah. Yes. Yes, we do have a movement in India called Hindutva, which believes that if you are an Indian, you are a Hindu. They want to preserve the Hindu culture, Hindu tradition. And so the Prime Minister now comes from that political wing, which believes in that philosophy. So it is not easy now for us to preach the gospel. That's why I was sharing more informal kind of ministries are more effective than formal. So the crusades and all that is a finished story in India. And we can't have large gatherings, and it is something that is always watched and warned. So things are not easy, but it is not closed. So it is not totally closed. The doors are still open because he visits all the European nation and Western countries. He needs to have good ties with all these countries. So he can't shut down Christians totally. So there is some hope, some space for us to still, continue. But I always believe that some of these moments are also refining moments for the church, because people who were lethargic and all that, they have to wind up their ministry because things are under scrutiny. The government is coming down on every penny you get and how you spend and everything and what is it being used for. So if you don't keep good accounts, everything will, will be highlighted, and that will be the end of the ministry. So things are under scrutiny, but I believe persecutions have only, propagated the cause of the kingdom. It has never gone the other way around. So I rejoice over what is happening. Yeah, counseling is a big taboo subject. They are very, very close to counseling. Usually when people come for counseling, that means all their options are finished. They've tried it all. Parents have intervened. The family has intervened. They have had a lot of informal peer counseling. Nothing works. So they say, let's go to a counselor. And by the time they come to us, usually the damage is all done. So it takes a lot of time. If both the parties involved, especially if it's marriage related, if both are willing to work together, then it works. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult to work with each couple. That is why we actually have been emphasizing more on the preventive aspect, because the curative aspect, of course, it works. It gives us room to share the gospel. We pray with our clients. We talk about what Jesus can do in their family life. But it's a long drawn process. But if you work preventively, that's why we got into schools. We said, let's talk to the children about it. That's why we work with, right now, as I'm speaking, there is a preparation for marriage classes happening in our center. That's not about dating couples who come. By the way, in India, it's arranged marriage. Parents arrange it and we get married, So first, we love the person whom our parents chose for us. Of course, there are different ways things are happening now. Usually it is not, a couple who date and then they go for pre-marriage. So for our premarital counseling sessions or camp that we conduct, it's not generally the couple who come. Anyone who is thinking of marriage in the next 5 years, they come to prepare themselves. So whenever it happens, they're ready. So that's how it is. Yeah, yes. Okay. There are a lot of needs for the ministry. In terms of, as I said, we started this master's in family life education with no idea how to go about it, but we started. But as we are moving, we are learning. So we definitely like expertise in the subject, which we have many here to come and teach, to come and teach our students, to equip them. So that's one area we've always looked up for resource people. And a lot of resources are available here because family has gone through tough times here before it happened in India. I think a lot of family resources have come up here. Now, those resources are very much needed now in India. But we always say, give it to us with permission to adapt it to our culture, to our situation. We can't just take it like that and use it because some of these things are not directly applicable there. So we have had family life here in Dennis and Barbara Rainey, their organization come over to India and train us and work alongside with us. But even when they come, we work with them to see that their resources are palatable before the Indian audience. So that's the second. And of course, financial resources is a big need. I do believe over a period of time, Indians can support Indian mission. God is raising people in India, and so over a period of time, but right now, we have not reached there. So we do need a lot of resources to make much more thing happen. When I come here and see the kind of budget that you all have for programs, which is sometime our annual budget, for our ministry, I sometimes think, why is it like that? But anyway, we have, that has helped us to be on our knees, depend on Him for everything. We need a computer, our staff will come together and pray. We need any small thing for our ministry, the first thing we do is we come together, we seek Him. And we have always got when we have sought Him. So that becomes an exciting point to share to all our staff. Our faith increases. In fact, most of our staff, our average salary, I was telling the elder board, our average salary is $200 per month. Most of us are underpaid. But they are all, masters in, business or masters in psychology or theology. But they come because they love the Lord. They want to serve the Lord. They've given up everything, saying, Lord, here we are. And most of our staff, at least 50% of our staff, are first-generation Christians. So they were non-Christians, Hindus. So they have just come to know the Lord. So they don't have a legacy or a heritage of anybody to support them. So I do most of the fundraising, and most of my needs are met by my family. My brother and sisters have graciously come up and said, we'll take care of your need and your family's need. I have a family that supports our work, and so I raise for the next other 25 staff who work in our organization. So this, we've had both positive and negative influence. Because we got freedom from the British, we had to tackle a lot of baggage they have given us also. To start with, because Christianity is seen as Western because of that, and Christianity is seen as alcohol drinkers and beef eaters. These are two no for a Hindu country. So these two things are very much there, and so We had to deal with some of those issues because it gave a very negative picture of what Christianity is. And sometimes they even think, loose morals are part of Christian, Christian morality, which is so far from what it is. Because what they see in Hollywood is Christian sometimes, you know. If you conclude what you see in Bollywood is Hindu, it can be dangerous too. It is not. So these are some of the ways that people have thought about Christianity. But coming to the positive side of influence, because they had built huge churches and these places are today available. We own some good schools and good properties and in India. And the missionary influence of especially education. In India, all the good schools are Christian schools. Unlike here, you have private and public school. Public school is run by government. Their public school, government schools are worst run and they hardly have any facility. Even some of the poor slum children, parents don't want to send them to that school. They would prefer them to go to a Christian school, a convent-run school, or a Catholic school. So that way, I think the church had gifted education. William Carey, and the Serampore trio, they call Alexander Duff and William Carey and others, they gave the Western education. William Carey is the father of Indian mission. He's the one who said, attempt great things for God, expect great things, and expect great things from God. So he has given education, and they have hospitals, education. These are Christian missionaries' gifts that we have in India. Yep. Okay. Just a thought that I wanted to leave with you. As an addition to what I already said, during the worship service, and I will continue for the second service as well, is this whole thought. Can I have the slides up? Yes. The next one. Yeah. This is. I can change, right? Sorry. This is my family. My older one is Arpit, who's on the side. Arpit means offered one. My second one is Ankit. My third one is Abhishek. My wife is Sibi. Sibi went to seminary with me. So we got trained together and we married now for 22 years. My son, Arpit, is training to be an architect. Second son, Ankit, is in his 11th grade. He wants to pursue finance. I don't know why. I told him once, so you can now raise all the funds for UIM. And he turned around and said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, why? He said, I'm going to fund UIM. He's not going to raise, he's going to become a great businessman and support the mission. Good for him. Our third one is Abhishek, which means the anointed one. So he is in seventh grade. So that's our family. Change two, yes. I'll change it. Change. Okay, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Preparing to meet our King as a family. One of the things that often we have emphasized, unfortunately, is a kind of an individual relationship with the Lord, which is important. But what we missed out in the bargain is, is the whole aspect of what Joshua said. I and my family together will serve the Lord. You know, the whole idea of household, you know, knowing the Lord and walking with the Lord is a theme I see, you know, in the Bible. Because it's not about individual. You know, it is more about how we as a family can, you know, be with the Lord and serve Him. Now, and that was God's design from the beginning. He created us as families, and He wants us as families. Now, the last prophecy in Malachi is, can somebody read the last verse of Malachi? Help me, I know this. Yeah. He will turn the hearts of the fathers, you know, the new NIV will say parents, to their children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers or parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction. Now, this is the last prophetic book, the last verse. He will turn the hearts of the children to their fathers. Now, this prophecy was fulfilled in the first child born in the New Testament. After 400 years, you know, when who's the first child born in the New Testament? Yeah, John, before Jesus, John was born. You know, if you look at John's gospel, Luke's gospel, 1:17. Can somebody help me read that? Okay, I got it. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. So this prophecy that you see in the Old Testament, prophesied by Malachi, you know, is fulfilled in the first child born in the New Testament, that is John the Baptist. Now, in other words, this was one of the, you know, manifesto, one of the criteria that God laid as a criteria to prepare the way for the Lord, for the Messiah. A criteria to meet the Messiah. A criteria to meet the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords was that He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children. In other words, He wanted the family to be in sync when we meet the Lord. He doesn't want us to just meet me as individual. You know, when I go to heaven, He's excited that I came to heaven. But He said, I have built a big mansion for you. I'm going to be alone in the mansion? No. He's excited about me, but the question is, where is Sibby? Where are my children? Are they coming? What will I say? No, I'm not sure. You decide. Am I going to say that? Or am I going to work intentionally in turning their hearts to the Lord and our hearts being together in worshiping the Lord, in meeting the Lord? You know, so this is, you know, something that I think we need to take as in a very, very serious note, because, you know, this we have somehow missed out on the kinship culture. We become so individualistic that we sometimes, you know, kind of don't think beyond us, beyond me. The I, me, myself spirituality has invaded the church as well. So God desires to see our families turning our hearts to each other. But whether we like it or not, intentional forces are working to destroy that, to keep our hearts engaged in ourselves. that we will be only consumed about our own well-being. There are a lot of intentional forces. I want to just show a few of them. These are forces that are targeting our children. We don't shoot for the 14-year-olds, we own them, says former MTV president. The food and beverage industry, along with the film industry, will spend over $22 billion per year. Now, this is a little old statistic, so I think it's increased. It has never decreased. Young adults 15 to 17 are excited consumers and extremely impressionable. Now is the time to influence their choices. Look at that. When we don't influence, there are people already working to influence our children, our next generation. If you don't teach your child, I will. Scary, isn't it? I want you to look at this verse. You know, we often talk about the Abrahamic covenant. God said he will bless the nations through Abraham. And when he said he's going to bless the nations through Abraham, now he picked up Abraham and he asked him to go to another land. And he said, I will bless you. I will make your generation as the sand of the sea. Great promise, isn't it? So what should Abraham do now? Because God has promised this great promise, does it automatically come into being, whether he works on it or not, or does he have a role to play? Look at this verse in Genesis chapter 18, verse 19. He says, this is God speaking when it in the context of destroying Sodom and Gomorrah. He says, for I have chosen him, Abraham, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just, so that the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he has promised him. So what is his job? What is the job of Abraham? To direct the family. To direct Isaac. That is why he's called the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is a God of generation. If the promise of God has to be fulfilled in our lives, and if we need to become part of that great inheritance of Abraham, I believe we need to do our job. We need to do our job of intentionally directing our young to him. It is not autopilot mode. Bring them to Grace Community Church. Put the autopilot. Everything will work out. It won't work out. Because God has appointed me as a father to be the faith trainer for my sons. That is the authority God has given me, and the command he has given me to do my job, to turn their hearts to him. For which our hearts should be turned to each other. Then only he will listen to me. We know Deuteronomy. Before they entered the promised land, God stopped them at Jordan and gave them some commandments. To love the Lord with all their heart, with all their soul, with all their strength. And then he said, these words I give you are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. You know, only in a home there are teachable moments, isn't it? There are a lot of teachable moments that come in our home. Because they are what they really are in their homes. My sons are what they really are in our home, not in the church. They're all well-dressed and, you know. Look at all my young friends here. How wonderful they look. Definitely angelic. Now the parents look like archangels. Good angels around them. You know, but it is in a home. You know, in lighter moments, in angry moments, we really, you know, the rubber will hit the road. You know, that's when we have those teachable moments. That's why the Word of God said, when you sit, when you stand, when you walk along, you know, when you lie down, I mean, all those teachable moments, teach them. In real life setting, don't increase the load of your Sunday school teachers. Let them teach a little bit here, but increase your load as parents. And my dear children who are sitting here, please listen to what they are teaching. You need to listen to them, because when Paul writes to the churches, literally every letter he wrote, every epistle he wrote, he made sure he wrote something about the household ethics. By the way, he was a bachelor. But still he cared, because the kingdom ethics and values are actually practiced in the context of our homes. So he taught them how to be a good father, how to be a good husband, how to be a good wife. And he tells the children, children, obey your parents in the Lord. You know why? Obedience to parents is not a favor you're doing to the parents. It's a favor you're doing to yourself. Because by obeying your parents, you're obeying God. And there is always a blessing that follows obedience to God. Isn't it? And so we need to really understand this in the context of obeying God, so that it will go well with you. It will go well with you and your children and their children for generation. If today we have lost this war in Europe, where are the Christians who sent missionaries to India, to the Asian countries? Where are the Christians there? It pains my heart to see, you know, churches closing down, becoming mosques and becoming bars and becoming offices. Sooner or later, it can happen here if we are not careful. If you have visited Turkey, your heart will bleed when you know that that's the place that Paul worked for so many years, and for a thousand years, it was the epicenter of all Christian activity. And now, the Christian population in Turkey is 5,000. The evangelical Christians. You can name them, you can count them. What happened? All the seven churches in the Revelation is there, but all in ruins. So things can turn around if we don't do our job. This is, you know, most of our problem comes not because somebody is coming and attacking us, because it is imploding from inside. We have not done our job inside. Let's not, you know, blame the media. Let's not blame all those people who are doing different things against our children. We have not done our job. Let's accept it. And we need to be careful that we do our job so that my faith becomes their faith. One generation away, things will turn around. We see it in the Bible. After Joshua generation, who said, I and my family together will serve the Lord. You know, the Bible says after that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Oof. One generation, everything is lost. They are forgotten. What needs to be done at home when it is not done? You lose a generation. And generations have been lost this way because we didn't do our job. How many of you know the Korean church? How many of you know that the Korean church, have known that the Korean church was exploding and, you know, sending out missionaries? You know, I've been to South Korea at least 3 times and I've seen, you know, I've been a good guest of a bishop. So, you know, I got to see some of those important places, those big churches and all that. But last time I went, last October, for a conference, the international conference was hosted by South Korea. And they told me, brother, 3 mega churches are coming together to conduct 1 Sunday school. We don't have children. We don't have our next generation. The Korean church has been on the decline for the last almost 2 decades. So, if you see evangelism happening, great church growth, beware. If we don't do our job, that will just vanish and wipe in the next generation. So, church growth is great, but sustaining that church growth is what we need to do. Which means we need to take this command seriously. Just a formula before I close. If we really need to turn our hearts to each other. Parents and children, take time to talk and enjoy each other. Some of you are wondering, how true is this in this fellow's house? You know, he seems to be traveling the globe. What is he talking about? Family. Friends, there was a time a few years back, almost 10 years back, my wife told me, if you keep traveling like this, you know, when you come back, your youngest son, who was then 2 years old, he will call you uncle. She said, you need to stay at home and start working on our family. Convicted by the Lord through my spouse. We decided to keep 1 day in a week exclusively family time. Monday evenings, family time. Anybody calls for counseling, we say, oh, we have an appointment with our children, in our home. It became one of the most precious moments of our family. I am not the national director of Urban India Ministries there. If I move out of Urban India Ministries, they will find another person. But my children will not find another father. And I had to be there to play with them, to talk to them, to enjoy. And, you know, now that they have become teenagers, this year I said, we need to do some Bible study together. Every week, we started to do a very informal Bible study at home with my teens. When I'm in America, I've been doing through Skype. Often when we are away, we do family prayer through Skype. So I'm not just saying theory here. It is practical. We can use the Skype and technology for all kind of nonsense. I think we need to start using it for the good things and for the extension of the kingdom and for building up our own family. Unite in purpose and prayer. What's the purpose for which we exist as a family. And I think the best place to come together on a daily basis is His presence, the family altar. Family altar alters your family. And we have seen that. I can go on. Probably invite me again. I'll come and talk more things. Respecting God-given roles. Rules, roles, and responsibilities that God has placed. Every person in our home has a rule, has a role. And the rules are made by us as a family. It's not daddy's rule. It is our rule for our home. You know, sometimes it is good to allow your teenagers to make rules in your home. They end up making more stricter rules than you. Whether they keep it or not, that's a second thing. You know, but it's good. Good to give them opportunity to do that. So that they know that this is a rule that we as a family have kept. After 10 o'clock, no Wi-Fi in our home. It's a rule. Because it's after 10 chatting and cheating starts. So we said, okay, we need some rules. Unless we put those godly rules, you know, I mean, Satan is looking for ways to enter and negotiate differences with an attitude of love and forgiveness. I mean, we will differ. This is not a military rule. You know, we are in a home of love and joy where Jesus is reigning. So we really need to negotiate, learn to talk, learn to negotiate differences. When my son turned 13, I mean, you may be surprised, I'm saying this in an American context, you know, he asked me if he can join Facebook. He's 19 now. But when he turned 13, he asked me if I can join Facebook. For a minute, I was confused. I don't find any scriptural verse to substantiate whether he can or he can't. Of course, he needs to get into that book, which is very important. But I had to talk to him. I asked him how ready is he to handle it? And how much can he handle if somebody put a wrong post about him? You know, we had to talk. And we didn't allow him to start when he was 13. When he was 15, he came back again and said, "Papa, you think I'm ready now?" I said, "Yes, but I have a request. Can you make me as your friend?" He doesn't know how smart his father is. Anyway. Well, so that's, you know, that's what I wanted to share. So the question is, where are our hearts today? Is our hearts turned to our children and our children's heart turned to parents? If it is not, I think some of you have to plead today to your children and say, "Hey, give me your heart. Don't give it to Facebook and social media and Instagram and WhatsApp and everything that's sapping all our energy. Give it to me." And children, you need to go to your parents and say, "Give your heart to me." You need to have that dialogue of giving each other your heart. Sometimes it's easy to give a heart to Jesus because you don't know where he is, so I give my heart. You know? But here is a father to whom you need to give your heart. And when we do that, please recognize this as something that the Lord requires of us to meet him as a family, as a way to prepare the way for the Lord. So the question I want to end, can we give our hearts to each other so that we can meet together as a family, either when he comes or when we go? May God help us to do that by his Spirit and by his power. Amen.